offering our loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind, and we are here to take you through this week's Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba episode, the book written by, or rather compiled by, Dr. Hislop, where he's had these wonderful conversations with Swami. Today the conversation that we're going to see is comes from the fact that, apart from being a spiritual aspirant, apart from being a devotee of Swami, Dr. Hislop also happens to be one of the key office bearers of the international organization. He played a very important role, especially in taking forward Swami's organization in United States. So the conversation is going to stem a little bit from that fact, and that also brings with it immense learning for all of us. But before we do all of that, we, as always, offer our loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet. We will go through this, I think, with that relevance that this has for members of the organization, people who are trying to lead their life in a manner that Swami would expect through the organization or otherwise, given the lot of challenges that the International Sai family is facing from many quarters. I think it's very important to go through this, and we're very grateful to Swami that he has said all of this much, much before all the trouble could even start, right? And I think, in a sense, the trouble is not new too. It has been coming in different forms. So we will go through all of that. And for doing that, let's, as always, invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. We had initiated this during the last satsang, I think 2 weeks back. And it starts off very casually with Swami asking Hislop what is the work he's doing in America. And Hislop says that, I am retired and I have no work. And Swami asks him, then how do you pass time? How do you pass the days? It's very nice to see Hislop's refreshing honesty, and he doesn't make any attempt to hide or paint something as glorious, or, you know, that's what usually, instead of saying that I have retired, I've got nothing else to do, we often try to cover it up and try to make it look very dignified and grand. Hislop makes no attempts like that here. He just says, Swami, I just, you know, try to make some sense out of my financial affairs. And there are some tasks that I need to do regarding the house. Other than that, there's nothing I'm doing. And then he also expresses his gratitude to Swami, saying that by our direct experience, our discrimination tells us that Baba is God himself. So what else is there to do? What else can be there? So Swami is also appreciating that honesty from Hislop. And he also says, Swami says, that it is a good opportunity for you to study Sai's teachings. It's very much in sync with the Sanatana Dharma tradition. When we look at the ashramas in human life, we have the Brahmacharya Ashrama, the Grihastha, then comes the Vanaprastha Ashrama. And that is the reason, before you enter the Vanaprastha Ashrama, that is at the age 60, they celebrate the Shashti Purti, a second marriage is actually conducted between the husband and the wife as well. It is symbolic that till now we have moved together to carry out worldly duties. From now on, our central focus would be our journey to God. We are fellow travelers on the path, and that shall be our sole focus now. That's why at Vanaprastha, all thoughts of, household and everything have to be slowly given up. You have to grow in detachment, and you start thinking about the actual goal of life, you know, having done all your worldly duties. That's why Swami is also telling Hislop that it's a good opportunity for you to study Sai's teachings. So, as Swami tells that, Hislop then asks, Swami must tell me what he wants the chairman of the Central Committee of America to do. That will be my work now. So, there's a conversation that's taking place in early 1970s, and Hislop, I think, attempts to direct the conversation towards, apart from study of Swami's teaching, Swami, I have got the responsibility still as the chairman of the Central Committee for America. He was the first person to be appointed that way. So he asks Swami, what should I do in that capacity? Otherwise, yes, Swami, I shall follow what you're saying. That is, read Sai literature, dive into it, enrich myself, grow spiritually. But as the chairman of the Central Committee of America, what am I supposed to do? And as always, Swami's answers are so beautiful. And as always, very relevant even for the situation now.
Right, and probably we'll just read out Swami's answer and then discuss about it. Swami says, you will need to do quite a bit of touring, visiting the Sathya Sai Baba centers. For this, since you are now retired, you should not pay out of your own pocket. I think this is again a part we had made a reference to last time, where Swami is saying that there will be a lot of touring, you'll have to go around, but preferably you should try not to spend from his own pocket. And we had also seen that this is a hidden instruction that for those who are retired, you don't have to spend from your pocket. For those who are still, you know, having their own means of income, it would rather be a good idea to spend on oneself, I mean, spend by oneself for this kind of activity. And then Hislop's answer to that is, I don't worry much about money. I'm a financial idiot and it can only be by Sai's grace that I am not flat broke by now. When I visit centers, Swami, they will expect discourses about what shall I talk. So that is the next question he asks, and I mean, this is, I think, a regular thing whenever leaders of the organization, important elders, travel around. I think it is expected that they will give talks and they will interact with office bearers there. So he's asking, what is it that he should talk about? And Swami answers, speak on the principles of spiritual life, on those things that Swami says are essential to reach God. The spiritual life, such as discipline, devotion, sadhana. Be clear, do your duty calmly, and the goal will be reached in due course.
What's so beautiful over here is, not only does Swami tell Hislop what he should speak about, he also tells him how he should speak it. So, what he should speak about is very clear. Whatever that is spoken should be that which helps us to reach God. I think that's a very, very beautiful touchstone. And how it should be spoken also, Swami says, be clear in your thoughts. In fact, I remember reading a quotation, I don't know whether it was on the walkway at Vrindavan or in a book, where Swami says, speak what you have experienced, nothing more, nothing less. So, be bold to share what you have experienced. At the same time, don't try to, you know, sound esoteric or try to speak beyond what you have experienced, because it will not connect, it will not touch the heart. And I think this has been many of our practical experience too, that when we communicate, when we have a satsang about Swami, only that part touches hearts or, you know, inspires or brings some kind of a positive emotion, only those parts which we have to certain extent experienced ourselves. Otherwise, it just becomes a hollow talk, a boring, monotonous talk. So, Swami is saying, he's not actually saying what is the precise topic. He's giving absolute freedom over there. But one thing is very clear is, anything that is spoken in the center should help one to reach God. That is a very, very beautiful touchstone. It reminds me of, you know, one or two incidents. One, Dr. Deepak Anand, he was narrating how, you know, he's a lecturer in the university and he's given many talks in Bhagwan's presence. On one occasion, after the talk, Swami asked him, how was the talk? So he was taken aback because it's Swami, you should tell. Swami then asked him, how do you know that your talk has been good or not? And Dr. Deepak Anand replied that, Swami, if Swami is happy, then I know that the talk is good. If Swami is not happy, then the talk is not good. Swami said, that you are telling now in Swami's physical presence. What if Swami is not physically present? Then how will you know? And when Deepak Anand said that, I mean, he just kept silent. Swami himself gave the answer. Swami said, at the end of the talk, even if one person comes to you and tells that they could feel Swami's presence, or they have been touched by Swami's love, or if there are tears of joy in their eyes, Swami said, you can know that your talk is a success. Even if one person comes and tells that or expresses that, you know, through tears of gratitude, or comes and says that, I experienced Swami here. So, it is very, very clear that it must give an experience of Swami, help us go closer to God. That is the only thing worthwhile speaking. Anything else is not good. Anything else is not necessary as well. This is a beautiful touchstone to help us focus, because if it helps us to feel God, experience God, the theme as such doesn't matter. You know, the other day I was speaking to Brother Abhimanyu Kaul. He was telling how Swami encouraged the students to speak for the first ever time possibly in the 1980s in the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha. You know, Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha comes as a part two of the Dasara Yagnam, and that is the venue where very, very brilliant and experienced and learned scholars give expositions on the Veda and the scriptures. In such a forum, Swami wanted the students to speak. So it was a great honor and a great responsibility too. But he was saying that when Swami would tell them to speak, he would give them absolute freedom. He would tell them to be ready with the speech and come and speak it. He would give them tips on how to be confident. He would give them tips on how to stand. He would give them tips on how to maintain eye contact, where to see, what one should think of, everything possible, but would not tell them what they should speak about. He would tell them, speak what inspires in the heart. And the kind of freedom that Swami gave was so amazing. Brother Abhimanyu was saying that there were no teachers or no seniors who would come and vet the talks. Nobody would come and check, what is it that you're speaking? Is it relevant? Nothing like that. Because Swami said, what's in the heart, let it come out. In fact, Swami strongly discouraged anyone from carrying papers as well. He would frown upon that. In fact, when they would go to take Padnamskar, if Swami would see a piece of paper protruding from the pocket, Swami would pull it out and tell, I'm not giving it to you, go and speak. Because I want you to speak from the heart. So what becomes very clear here is, Swami is not particular that you should speak on this topic or that topic, but whatever you speak about in the center, it should be something that inspires, the experience of divinity in the listeners as well as in the speaker. So that is the touchstone, and I think it's a beautiful thing that is relevant for those times as well as all times to come in the future.
Right. I think from what you were saying, the most important thing, I think this is something that Swami would often tell. Swami has told the students, as you were saying, many of our lecturers, Swami would say that speak your own experience, you know, don't talk about others' experience and all of that. There's a very important balance that Swami is striking here, I think, in a sense, because nowhere in that reply Swami says, speak about Swami, right? I think it is understood, I'm not saying that Swami is saying, don't speak about me. I think it is understood. But when Swami is emphasizing, speak about principles of spiritual life, speak about discipline, speak about devotion and sadhana, Swami is saying that even if you are going to quote your own experiences, even if you're going to quote your interactions with Swami, it should be something that inspires somebody to take to the spiritual life. It should be something that inspires somebody to lead a disciplined life, you know, express devotion or take to service. Whatever are the principles that Swami has taught. It should not be for, you know, somebody to look at you and say that, oh, here is a very great person who has had great opportunities from this. And I think that is in the bottom line, especially as leaders and elders of the Satya Sai organization. In fact, there are a few of Dr. Hislop's talks in our repository. Listeners, if they're interested, they can actually look up. There are some talks which he has given in many Sai centers. Very beautifully, in most of the Sai centers, devotees are very eager and keen to listen about experiences and, incidents where Swami did something miraculous. So he says that, I know that some of you want to hear these things. So sometimes what he would do is either keep it to the right, keep it to the last part of the talk, or he'll say, okay, I will tell you a few experiences, we'll get done with that, and then we'll talk about what is important, what Swami would want me to talk about. It's not that when he's talking about Swami's message, there are no experiences. In fact, there are some question answer sessions where very beautifully he brings in what Swami has said, or he narrates an experience and he says, this is what I learned through what Swami did. But at the same time, that emphasis on, as Swami said here, to lead a spiritual life. Swami constantly says, that's the whole process. The Lord comes down in a human form so that you can be weaned away from a worldly life and turn to a spiritual life. And that should be the goal of anybody who's trying to communicate anything with regards to Swami's message. And at the same time, I think this also we've spoken about, Swami is clearly saying here, this on those things that Swami says are essential to reach God. The problem with most of us when we talk about our own experiences, you know, if there are 10 things Swami says are essential to reach God, we will end up speaking about 3 or 4 things which I follow. Right? Mm. If I do not have the opportunity to do as much seva and I'm a bhajan singer, I might end up speaking too much about the relevance of bhajan singing in the spiritual path. Which is good if you're a bhajan singer, if you are, you know, going in front of the audience as a bhajan singer and you're speaking. Or if you're a person who's given to doing enormous amounts of seva, you might go there in front of the audience and say that this is the path to reach God. Which again is good if you're representing yourself as a person who is doing a lot of seva. But when you're going there as a representative of Swami's message, as Dr. Hislop, as somebody who's taking Swami's message to all devotees, I think it becomes very important to speak what Swami says are the essentials of spiritual life.
To have a balance.
Right. Whether or not you are following all of that.
Hmm.
The messaging will be best if you follow all of that and then tell. There's absolutely no doubt about that, and that's what makes Swami's message effective when it comes from him. But at the same time, the importance that you should represent Swami as, you know, Swami says, because much of the distortion we see in Swami's message today is because, you know, people have their own agendas, people have their own preferences as to how to lead a spiritual life, which is not wrong for the individual, but when conveying Swami's message, I think we end up distorting Swami's message slightly.
When you say that, I am reminded of how a few years before my parents came and settled in Puttaparthi, they told me that this kind of a Devi Yagnam, or basically some mantra to propitiate a goddess, this has to be done. This has been taken up as the sadhana by certain samitis, certain centers. And her question was, is this what Swami has recommended? I couldn't remember any such recommendation that Swami had given in a public discourse or something like that. And I told her that it is not as if Swami recommends this. It is not as if Swami opposes it. If you like it, you can do. But if that is the wish of everyone together. And she was speaking of it as being imposed. And on further inquiry and investigation, we found out that the person who was in a leading position in that samiti or center, he had been blessed with an interview with Swami. And for his personal sadhana, Swami had allowed or, you know, encouraged him to proceed along a certain path, do certain mantra, propitiate a certain goddess. Now that, which was a personal directive, like you said, he had taken it and made it into a overall universal directive for the Sai Center. So his intentions would have been absolutely innocent and
pure.
Good only, pure, yeah. But that is not what is intended. It is not about pushing that onto others. And that is what, you know, Swami tells also. In fact, in the next statement itself, Swami is saying, because Hislop says, Swami's teaching is clear enough and that is what can be said. And Swami says, what is needed most now is that devotees must have tolerance of each other. And they do not have any seasoned discrimination in respect to the many gurus and their various spiritual paths. They have not had the face-to-face confrontation with Swami that you have had. And you have considerable background in spiritual life and they have not. You must carry them along with you. So here Swami is saying that one thing that is most important is all must have tolerance. And the other thing is not imposing. Exactly what you said. In another way, Swami is saying is, you will have people who have different kind of regards for different gurus. We see that happening, you know, very commonly, especially nowadays. It is not as if every person in the Sati Sai fold is 100% dedicated to Swami alone. They have their likings, they have other gurus, they have other gurus who have, you know, who are historical in nature, like Ramana Maharshi or Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. They also have many gurus who are possibly still alive, who are contemporaries. And so Swami says you must have broad-mindedness to accept everything and not impose one particular on anybody else. That is why I think even in the bhajan session, Swami recommends that let all the deities' names be sung. Let all the different forms be sung. Because, you know, even if you think of Vithala and Krishna, they're all supposed to be the same Lord Narayana. But still Swami says, no, there should be Vithala, there should be Narayana, there should be Krishna. Because even there, people will have different preferences and choices. So that is the kind of broad-mindedness Swami wants everyone to inculcate, and that is the broad-mindedness Swami stands for. Now, at the same time, when we go to the next what Swami says, we'll go to that a little later, it becomes very clear that this broad-mindedness is not about diluting what Swami stands for as well.
Right, I think that is probably the essence of whatever Swami says. You know, always there's about compassion, about kindness, about being all-inclusive. But at the same time, discipline always is a part of what Swami says. And discipline is something which is immutable. It is not up for argument. And that's what Swami says in the first statement. He said devotion and discipline is important. And here, Swami is, in a way, pointing out to Hislop what are his advantages. As we've been talking about Hislop all this while, he's a spiritual aspirant who has come and found the relevance of Swami's message. Right? Mm-hmm. He is somebody who has gone through so many other spiritual texts and so many other methods of leading a spiritual life. And when he's, in his own words, he has found that Swami's message is very simple, it is very direct, it is very applicable to modern day life. And it really cuts all the clutter and it puts things in perspective. And he has seen that, and Swami is pointing out to that, you know, you've been in a spiritual life and you've also had this opportunity of having a face-to-face interaction with Bhagwan. And you should rely on these as the resources for which, you know, which you will take forward and you will present before others. Mm. And again, this is probably the most important message for most of the elders, because I think a lot of us belong to that generation where we've had the opportunity to interact with Swami. And we are going to be interacting with people who have not had the opportunity to interact with Swami. And Swami is clearly saying that if Swami would consider us, I mean, definitely not as aspirant as Dr. Hislop, but at least to an extent, if we have been aspirants, I think that should be our goal to take forward that. The importance we have seen, the relevance we have seen in Swami's message with Swami himself, because as one Swami was telling some devotees and students, Swami is saying that the hope that you have found in Swami's presence, that hope you should take it forward to devotees, because that's what is lacking.
The hope, the love, the joy.
Right.
That's why I think, you know, going back to what Swami had said, that if one person also comes and tells the experience, Swami, personally, my attempt is, you know, whenever we speak anything, whenever we write anything, the idea is at the end of it, people should feel Swami in their heart. As you rightly said, it should not be a feeling of, you know, how I wish I could also get like this. You are lucky, I am not. If at all these are the feelings that are getting aroused in people, then we can be convinced that we are doing it wrong. It should be done in such a manner that people remember only Swami. You know, one beautiful model for us to emulate is possibly Professor Kasturi or even Dr. John Hislop. In those video talks that one or two are there on YouTube, which you see, the way they narrate about Swami, the way they narrate the experience also, though it's their own personal experience, the focus is entirely on Swami. Everyone is able to enjoy the magnitude of God's love, the magnanimity of God's love, and the mysterious ways, the leelas that he does. And at the end of it, you're filled with so much of Swami Tattvam, that Swaminess. I think that is something that has to be conveyed, because that is what we experienced when we came face to face with him, right? I think this is another beautiful statement that Swami is giving. What you have experienced when you came face to face with Swami, can that experience be granted to the people who are unable to have that physical experience? So for that, it's most important that we be pure and clean conduits of Swami's love, to ensure that, what Swami's love flows through us is definitely 100% pure. What we have to do is to ensure that our own thoughts, feelings and our ideas and our biases doesn't contaminate that flow. And that's why I think one of the prerequisites for anyone who wishes to communicate the experiences with Swami or love of Bhagwan or teachings of Bhagwan is to do some kind of personal sadhana. Because as you rightly pointed out, Swami is telling that to Hislop as well, that not only have you come face to face with Swami, that is not enough, you have considerable background in spiritual life as well. So face to face with Swami helps you to carry that message and love of Bhagwan, and your own spiritual sadhana and pursuit will ensure that you don't contaminate that, that you are a good carrier of that and you are able to distribute it as well. So both are very, very important. We have been blessed to have got the first one, you know. So it is our duty, I think, to ensure that we rigorously and religiously do the second one, which is keeping the container clean.
The two, three things which Swami used to tell, I mean, it's not said in one given point, but in different occasions which Swami has said about what of this experience with Swami that you have to carry forward and share it with others. On one occasion, Swami had told this to students. Swami was saying about giving this analogy, I think we must have mentioned this before, of what happens when an ant finds a piece of jaggery or finds a source where there is a, you know, huge block of jaggery. So Swami was saying the first thing it would do is it would taste the jaggery. And then Swami said it will take a part of the jaggery and go to its colony and it will show that sample to everybody there and say, I found this and I know where it is. Come with me. So Swami is telling students, this is what you should do. You have found Swami. You have found the sweetness of Swami's love. Now you have to take a bit of it, which means you should reflect that yourself in your life. And when people ask you, you should say that I know where it is. Come, I will take you to them. So that is one thing. One is the sweetness of Swami's love, the sweetness we have experienced in Swami's love, that should be taken forward. On another occasion, Swami has said that, you know, when anybody asks you, do you know that God exists? You should tell with complete confidence, yes, I know God exists and I know where He lives. He lives in Puttaparthi. Right? We may or may not say that every time that, you know, Puttaparthi or Prashantinilayam, but Swami says that conviction should be there. Even when you, you know, when your children come and ask you, you know, is there God or do you think God responds? You see, you should say, yes, He is there. That conviction you should pass on. And the third thing which Swami had told, I think again to, during one of the summer courses, Swami said that all of you should take this message of fearlessness to people. That fearlessness which comes out of faith. Swami said, you know, all of confusion, all of pain, anger, the hatred which is there in society is all because of fear. And you should take the message of fearlessness to people.
And if we have to take this message of fearlessness or even love of Bhagwan, I think first we have to, as you said, have conviction in that. That's why Swami's style of leadership always went in the order of be, do and tell. Telling came the last. Telling people, you know, telling is one of the way we see it in Swami's hierarchy. Speaking about or telling is possibly the least effective and important way of communicating. More important and effective is doing. Doing, because actions speak louder than words. But more important than doing also, Swami would say, is being. Because doing without being would be hypocritical. As hypocritical as speaking without doing. You speak of doing something, but you yourself don't do it. We call that hypocrisy. It is possible that we also do something so that we appear good, but we are not actually that. That is also hypocrisy. That's why Swami would say it starts with being. How can you go and console someone saying, don't worry, Swami knows what is best and what He is giving you is for your own best, for your own good. When you yourself question Swami with the smallest difficulties in your life. This is a question that I would often ask myself, Prem, if needed, forcibly inculcate this surrender. If, how can I inspire somebody about surrender if I myself don't practice it? And practicing it doesn't mean just, you know, doing it, having trepidation in the heart. That calmness should be there. That complete conviction has to be there. And what Swami says is that is there. Even if you don't speak, it will still get communicated. And I'm sure all of us have experienced different people like this in our own organization, in our own centers, in our own ambience, where people, when they have that unshakable faith in God, they seem to exude some kind of calmness, some kind of energy, some kind of goodness, that even if they don't speak, we are happy in their presence. We just feel good just telling a Sai Ram to them, or if they speak two words to us, we feel good about it. So that is where the importance of being comes in. And that is the reason why Swami also says that speaking or telling comes at the end of the hierarchy. Before speaking, you have to do. But before doing, you have to be. Be, do and tell. That should be the hierarchy. And if we follow that, then I think everything that Swami is saying, we will be able to achieve.
In fact, there's a discourse I think Swami gave in the 1991 summer course, where he starts speaking about what is the purpose of life. And there Swami says, you know, in one sentence Swami gives what is the purpose of life, right? A definition which probably Swami doesn't give so often. Swami says, live in society, look around, lead your life, and through your life you learn things. And what you learn, you practice, and after having found the joy, you share. Right? So Swami says, sharing actually becomes a very essential part of finding purpose in life. That you find the ways of leading life, or the, you know, the spiritual answers to how life has to be led, practice it, and then having been convinced that yes, this works, then you share it. But the problem is, I think we today live in a world where the moment I know something, I want to share it before I try it myself. I think we really live in a life, in a world like that, where I think the sharing button comes first, right? The practice comes much later. And I think we all are getting into that problem of the moment you get to know something which is exciting or interesting, we want to share it before we have made it a part of our life already.
Very, very, very correct, Prem. You know, how many times we look at some exciting headline on the art, on the web or anywhere, and even before we have read through the whole article, we click the share button that is right on top there. I think this happens on all kinds of social media, on whether it's Facebook or WhatsApp. Many times we forward and share stuff which we ourselves have not gone through fully. There might be a very inspiring 20-minute video. We look at the first 3 minutes and we are inspired within the first 3 minutes. But even as I am receiving the inspiration, one part of my mind is already thinking, who all will be the others who will appreciate this and I should share it with them, you know. So that this kind of sharing in the negative sense has become very rampant nowadays, whether it's a beautiful sunset that we are experiencing. Even before the experience of that sunset is complete, I'm already thinking of whom all I should share this with. You know, so rightly put, it is important that we experience completely, and having experienced it and having benefited by it, share it selflessly. The reason behind this negative sharing is because this sharing is selfish. You know, we want possibly to get that whatever fame or name that comes from, oh wow, you know, this is the person who shared it. It's not about the experience as much as it is about who shared it. So selfless sharing is what we have to propagate, not this sharing where there is the element of selfishness. And all of this, you know, Swami actually speaks about, touches it. We'll possibly go to the next sentence where Hislop is saying that Swami's teaching is clear enough and that can be said, and Swami says that what is needed most is that devotees must have tolerance for each other. You have considerable background in spiritual life, devotees don't have. You have had face-to-face interaction with Swami, they have not had, so you must carry them along. After this, Hislop says that the new rules for the centers that will be in the guidelines will shake many centers. I think possibly it's because it's very strict, and this is where we come to the point where, which I referred to, wherein Swami makes it very clear that being broad-minded and broad-based doesn't mean you compromise, doesn't mean you dilute Swami's teachings and Swami's message. But I think we'll take that up after a quick little break. Dear listeners, we will take this break. On the other side of the break, we will go to Swami's beautiful answer to this question from Hislop, where he says, Swami, the new rules for the centers that will be there as guidelines will definitely shake many centers.
Saraswati Namastubhyam Varade Kamarupini Vidyarambham Karishami Siddhir Bhavatu Me Sada namo sharada namo sharada namo sharada mata
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 he vidya gyan pradayini Saishwari Mata
Satya Saishwari Mata
Satya Saishwari Satya Saishwari Satya Saishwari Mata Satya Saishwari Satya Saishwari Satya Saishwari Mata Sharada Mata Satya Saishwari Satya Saishwari Mata
Welcome back, dear listeners. Hislop tells Swami that the new rules for centers that will be in the guidelines will shake many centers. And both Prem and myself, we think that these rules refer to where Swami says that footwear is not allowed inside. And, you know, more importantly, men on one side, the women on the other side, there's no mixing of genders, which has to be strictly followed. And decent dressing, the dress code, where it is not, you know, you are properly clothed. So all these kind of rules, Swami says, must be followed. And Hislop is saying that these will definitely shake many centers. In response, Swami says, that will be the case. Sai centers must reflect the distinctive character of our organization. There cannot be a mixing of a Satya Sai Baba center with the many gurus and the many spiritual paths. We have our goal. Swami has shown the path to follow, and we must quietly and sincerely devote ourselves to that path. The leaders must provide the example in their conduct. I mean, it can't get clearer than this. So clear, so precise, where Swami is saying no compromise. You know, no compromise in the practices, no compromise there. It has to be. Just because someone is unable to follow something doesn't make that compromisable. In fact, if a person confesses to Swami, you know, Swami, I'm finding it hard to follow this, Swami will shower love and try to help. But nowhere will Swami say, you're finding it hard, no problem, leave it off, don't. No, the ideal is still the ideal. No lowering of the ideal, just that help will be given. So in giving help, be broad-minded, but when it comes to the ideal, be fixed, be rigid, no lowering of the ideal, not permitted at all. That is what Swami says. In fact, it reminds me of some episode that was being narrated by, you know, Dr. Pitre. He was speaking of how in the decades before, when the human values movement was growing strong and big, they decided to take it across the country, and it was taken up to many governments as well. And it was decided, you know, many of the governments were agreeing and ready to. When I say governments, I'm meaning within India, we have many state governments, we have state government run schools. So I'm speaking of those governments. So different states, it was proposed, and I think each state has hundreds, if not thousands, of government run schools.
Right.
So it was agreed that this human values will become an integral part of education in all these schools, which was viewed as a very big victory for the Satya Sai organization by all the elders and senior members of the organization. But the government had its condition. It said that, see, let's keep it to human values. Let's not bring in God over here. You know, God and human values are good. Truth, righteousness, peace. Let's follow all this, but let's propagate all these, but let's keep God out of everything. It didn't seem like a big compromise or a big, you know, drawdown, and therefore, more or less they agreed, and they wanted to take finally Swami's vetting, Swami's blessings to proceed, because all the groundwork had been done now. But when they came to Swami, Swami was livid. Swami, you know, I'm not quoting Swami, but what he said was like, how can you have human values without God? This is nonsense. Swami said, you scrap the whole agreement and whole deal, no problem. Let it not be, if it has to be taught, it has to be taught in the right manner. Like I remember the other quote where Swami says that if a child is refusing to take the pill, you can insert that pill in a banana to feed it, if it makes it easier for the child to consume the pill. Or, you know, it doesn't matter, you insert it in an apple or anything. But make sure that you don't change the pill, don't change the nature of the pill, because then the disease will not get cured. So also Swami said that you cannot have human values without God. God is the source for the human values, and you want to keep God out. If it is going to be done that way, I don't want to be associated. So it was not. So that is why it didn't happen. It didn't progress at all. So it is very, very clear that, so even to this day, you know, when the Center for Human Values at Prashant Nilayam, or whether it's a Vidya Vahini, or even when the Vidya Jyoti, which is Satya Sai education to different schools, any of them take up any program, they make it a point to emphasize that there is God, and God is the source of all these human values, and then only proceed onto the human values, because Swami had made it very clear. I think they have had one experience where the whole thing had been scrapped because of you know, this lack of conviction. It finally boils down to our own conviction. You know, if we make compromises, it only shows our own lack of faith in Swami's words and Swami's system. So we need to have that conviction. That's why it is about be, do and tell. It is very evident that when we make compromises, we may be doing and telling what Swami wants us to do and what Swami wants us to tell, but we are not being what Swami wants us to be. And that is why that conviction, that faith is so important, and Swami is not ready to make any compromise on these ideals. Yes, the broad-mindedness is there in being compassionate, being loving, being kind towards somebody who is struggling and helping them. But it should not be misdirected compassion or kindness wherein we lower the ideal standards just to help somebody. We help somebody by raising their standards, not by lowering the ideal.
There is this, I think the first discourse that Swami gave when he was inaugurating the Anandapur College, essentially Swami's educational movement itself when it comes to higher education. Swami had said this, I'm not again quoting verbatim, and that discourse is there, 1968. The discourse that Swami gave in Anandapur. Something to the effect of Swami said, you know, entire generations of students have been deprived of the knowledge of God and the comfort that comes from falling back on God, right? Hmm. And Swami said, the greatest mistake the educationists of modern times have done is to remove God from education. And Swami said, I want to bring up young children with faith in God. And that is one of the reasons why I am starting this college, is what Swami had said. Because as Swami would often say, you know, because the idea of morality becomes very shallow when you do not have the foundation of spirituality. Mm. And there's no spirituality, of course, without the concept of God at all. So that's why Swami would say that you cannot have morality in society without spirituality. And it all starts with inculcating, you know, love for God and fear of sin, right? As Swami would put it.
Daiva Preeti, Papa Bhiti, right. Sanganiti.
And, you know, there is this very gentle balance that has to be maintained as an organization. When we are looking at an organization, the goal of any organization is to grow, right? The goal of any organization would be to maintain, stay stable and to grow. And when you talk about an organization growing, you're always talking about inducting new members, spreading, getting more people under your fold. But at the same time, at what cost is what is to be kept in mind? That are we going to change the structure or the essence of the organization to accommodate more people so much so that you're going to change the very nature of the organization?
Mm.
I think that is the mistake most of us end up doing. And Swami is saying that there are some things which are not of argument, right? These have to be followed. And if you do not agree with it, then, you know, there are other ways of reaching God. As Swami himself has said, this is not, you know, Swami is so broad-minded, he says that the Sai Center or the Sai organization is not the only way to reach God. Right? It's not like a religion which says that this way or there is no way. For being a part of the Satsai organization, you have to follow these things.
Exactly. I remember, there was a guidelines list for picking Samiti conveners or state presidents, district presidents, everything, where Swami says that he must have complete conviction that Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba is my God. And he or she should be able to, you know, convince their entire family as well and participate as a family in all the prescribed activities of the Satsai organization. Otherwise, they should not be. Like you said, it is not as if Satsai Seva organization is the only way to reach God. But if you choose to reach God via the Satsai Seva organization, then compulsorily you must have this. Otherwise, you are not a member of the Satsai Seva organization. You are not Swami's devotee. You are not that. That is what Swami made it very clear. I was, in fact, slightly surprised to see that, where Swami said, if a person doesn't have that absolute conviction that Satsai Baba is God, you should not. Which makes it very clear that, you know, from a practical point of view, practical in quotes, I would say, because that is what we consider as practical. We would want somebody who is possibly influential or possibly having, who is well endowed financially to possibly head a samiti or something, because it will facilitate seva activities and other activities with a little more ease, because they either have the influence to get it done or they have the money or wherewithal to get it done. But as far as Swami is concerned, and that is what all of us must be concerned about only, it is a strict no-no. Swami says, no, not needed at all. The only qualification, but the necessary qualification for that is, you must have complete conviction that Bhagwan is God. That's all. Nowhere in any qualification does Swami speak about influence or affluence or anything like that. So, these are the things that Swami focused on. And as you rightly said, if in our own concept of being broad-minded or broad-based, we are violating these concepts or these founding principles that Swami has given, then we are changing the very nature itself. It's no longer Sri Satya Sai Seva organization. It's no longer the organization or the center to which Sri Satya Sai has given his name. If we want to have that name associated, we definitely have to follow and give importance to what Swami gave importance to.
And that is why I think it's very, very important when we try to pass on the idea of Swami, or you know what we have understood of Swami, as Swami was telling his love just a while ago, it becomes very important to even add that discipline aspect of Swami. There are a lot of youngsters who come to Swami, and it's very easy to get attracted to Swami's loving nature and Swami's kindness and Swami's compassion. In fact, I think Professor Kasturi writes in one of the early parts of the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, not the first part, maybe the second, or you know, somewhere in one of those parts where he writes that we've seen all of these people who have accompanied Swami to the Chitavati sands, have witnessed enormous mind-boggling miracles. But even as he says that I sit to write these chapters, many of them do not come to Swami anymore. Right? Your human mind has been convinced beyond any doubt that here is somebody who is not human, who is able to do things which you have not seen anybody else doing. But still, why do you give him up? Right? And one of the things he says is because Swami is very, very demanding when it comes to discipline. And a lot of people cannot live up to that. And it's not that they get upset with Swami, but they excuse themselves because they feel that they are not prepared to fall in line with Swami. And Swami would say that discipline is a very, very important aspect. And I think there's that very beautiful interaction. I think one of our brothers was narrating in Thrai Vrindavan when Swami was talking. Mm-hmm. Swami was playing with words. Swami said, see, if you're a boy, you should have behavior. Right? Three things Swami says. If you want to be called a man, you should have manners. If you have to be my boy, you should have behavior. And then Swami said, if you want to be called a devotee, we would expect Swami would say devotion. And Swami said, if you want to be called a devotee, you should have discipline. Swami said, a devotee is defined by discipline, not even devotion. Right? So that is something that we have to keep in mind. And as Swami was saying here, you know, it is important that, you know, the Sai Baba centers Swami says that you must carry them.
Along with you.
Right.
And then Swami says that they must reflect the distinctive character of our organization.
Right. There cannot be a mixing of, we've not yet come to that part. But the point which Swami is telling is about each one, especially the elders, standing as an example. In fact, you know, when I was reading about one particular concept which Krishna explains to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he speaks about karma, and he speaks about jnanis who through karma have reached a state where they don't need karma anymore. Right? Who have transcended duty. Who have reached a state where there is no ego, and when you don't have any ego, you don't have any duty. You're nobody's son, you're nobody's husband, you're nobody's, you know, you're not related to anybody. So none of the dharmas actually apply to you. But Swami says even such a jnani will continue to do his dharma only because he or she becomes an example. And those who are lesser in discrimination will look at such a person and follow. Right? When you look at it, somebody like Hislop or many of the elders in the organization might not need a discipline like gender discrimination. Right? They certainly come to a state of purity where, you know, such things will not affect their mind. Or they might have come to a state where, you don't have to teach them to be silent. You don't have to teach them to do namasmarana. You don't have to teach them to follow any of these disciplines necessary. But as Swami was saying, that even if you have transcended the need for these disciplines, as a person of the organization, it is good if you follow it because you're setting an example and you're keeping intact the setup which Swami has created for new members to come in and benefit out of it. And I think that is a very important point that Swami is saying, that you will have to carry it forward through example.
That's why he says the leaders must provide the example in their conduct.
Right.
So, after that, Hislop says, not all present centers devote themselves entirely to Sai teachings. Because Swami said that centers should be about only Sai teachings. And Swami says, at present, some people form their own organizations and use the Sai center name as a tool to promote their own interests and ends. Some leaders have a yoga business and use the Sai name as a way to add to the business. So Hislop says, what to do with such? And then I'm sure that Hislop is refraining from naming, but he says, is the prominent leader an exception to this rule? The rule that a leader of a Sai center cannot carry on yoga classes or any classes related to spiritual sadhana and charge the students money. And Swami says, Swami is not aware of having exceptions. So Swami makes it very clear that you can't use a Sai center as a place, as a venue for your yoga classes or your meditation classes or any classes, even if those classes are meant to spiritually benefit you, in quotes again. So, any kind of classes, if you are going to charge money. It is very, very evident that Swami is completely allergic to money being collected for anything. Anything. You may say that I'm teaching yoga, I'll teach Nama Japa, it is basic. We are not collecting fees, we are just taking cost. No, 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 no. Swami would say that everything that God gives is completely free of cost. This organization is also like that. So no, not saying that I am just collecting my traveling fees. If you are finding it difficult to travel and come to teach, then don't travel, don't teach. No, but no collection of money under any pretext. It becomes so very, very clear. In fact, I remember reading in a discourse, listening to Swami speak with lividity, you know, where Swami is saying, do you need money to do a Nagar Sankirtan? And Swami is saying, do you need money to do Narayan Seva? What is Narayan Seva? Swami says, Narayan Seva is when you keep aside, when you make a sacrifice. Because Swami would say, without sacrifice, no Seva is there. Swami would say, every day from your food, keep aside a little morsel. Sacrifice that much, eat that much less and keep it aside for somebody else. Collect that over a month and use that to feed somebody else. And Swami would say, for this do you need money? You don't need money. To do Nagar Sankirtan, do you need money? No, you don't need money. To gather and discuss about Swami, do you need money? You don't need money. Then why are you collecting money? This is how Swami asked. You know, if you look at it in a sense, these bhajans and Nama Sankirtana, Nagar Sankirtana, they represent the bhakti, bhakti marga. The seva, Narayan seva, it represents the karma marga. This discussion, study circle about Swami, it represents jnana marga. It's almost, you know, when you hear the discourse, it's like Swami is saying, for either bhakti, karma or jnana, you don't need money. And Satya Sai is only about bhakti, karma and jnana. So why are you bringing in money there? So Swami is very, very clear, and he even states it explicitly for Hislop that the Sai center cannot be used as a venue to do any other activity, especially if it's involving money there. You should not. On their own, you know, somebody wants to come and teach a little yoga. They're doing it as their offering to Swami, and it is not being enforced on everyone in the center, and those who are wishing to learn are also learning it as their offering to Swami for mutual benefit, no money involved, then maybe okay. But the moment money is involved, it's a strict no. Sai center cannot be used for any other activities. And in fact, I think in some other place, Swami tells Hislop also, if it is that, then shut down the center also. I'm not attracted by the number of centers. I'm not interested in growing. This year we have 40 centers. Next year we have a 10% growth. We have 44 centers. I'm not interested in the number of centers. As always, Swami says, a spoonful of cow milk is better than a barrel full of donkey milk. Swami's only concern is quality, and that quality should not be diluted at any cost.
The instruction is, you know, very, very clear, because I think it happens in a lot of places where might not be always with malign interest. You know, a lot of people come and they probably have an idea of how a spiritual life has to be led. Or there are a lot of people who in fact come to Radio Sai, and recently I had a talk with somebody, and he said, you know, everything of Swami's message is very, very good, and, you know, Swami speaks about seva and all that, but yoga is not emphasized enough. I said, which yoga? He said, Patanjali's yoga, right? It is not emphasized enough. So I want to give a series of talks on the radio on Patanjali Yoga, right? And clearly this is somebody who's, you know, not with the wrong intention. He probably has dedicated himself to that form of spiritual life, and he feels that, you know, there is a lot of relevance in that. And literally he's looking for an audience which is already with that mindset, which is already having a spiritual upbringing or a spiritual culturing already, for sharing this kind of thoughts, right?
Mm.
And I think that kind of a thing happens pretty much in this Sai Center. Same way with seva activities. In fact, there's a discourse where Swami says, you know, there are a lot of people who do seva. There are a lot of NGOs which do seva. Swami names a few, some of these, you know, clubs which are very famous, men's and women's clubs. Swami says, see, they also do a lot of seva. They come together, they have their parties, they also have fund collection in the name of seva, and they do a lot of seva. Swami says Sai centers should try to avoid joining such clubs and doing seva, because the approach is different. Swami very beautifully says, it's not that they're doing wrong work and you should not do it, but when I tell you to do seva, the approach that I'm asking you to have is different. And when they do it, they will do it in a different way, and they will want to do, you know, fundraisers. They will want to do, you know, call a VIP and give that person an importance. So Swami says, see, these are things that you should not be doing in the Sai Center. And when you start, you know, you'll have to, there will be some give and take when there's
a
partnership.
If you collaborate, if you try to
collaborate. When there's a collaboration, there will be a give and take. And that time you cannot stick to these things strictly. Something as simple as gender discrimination. The moment you start collaborating with somebody else, then you cannot enforce such things there.
Correct.
Right? It's very clear that these are things which are very, very dear to Swami, and you should ensure that these are practiced in a manner. As somebody was saying, you know, there are thousands of organizations around the world which are doing charity, right? And the Satya Sai organization is not going to be the only organization which is going to solve all the problems of the world. That was not the mandate given to the organization. But Swami has given a certain way in which the organization, the Sai centers, have to be led. And the explanation for that is all there in Swami's message. Nothing is unexplained, nothing has been given without a certain purpose. Everything is there in Swami's words, in Swami's own voice, and I think it is up to us to ensure that it is maintained in that same manner, and also the relevance of all of that is explained to people who are coming without, in that same context where Swami was saying that close down the centers. Swami is saying, but even if one person is coming, keep it open.
Mm.
And Swami is saying that you should always have an open arm to whoever wants to come. Whoever is sincere enough to come and try out the way we have set the things, you should be open enough for that. And that balance, Swami says, you'll have to learn to strike.
Hislop then says, I understand the same principle applies to all, meaning there are no exceptions. Then he continues to say, probably such a leader will at once say that entirely apart from their yoga business, they will continue to be an officer of the Satya Sai Center. And Swami says, how would that be practical? There would still be the same mixture. Such individuals will have to decide to go one way or the other. Two ways at once will not do. And that will be the case for everyone. Those devotees who wish to determine a separate path for their organizations are quite free to do so. Swami is saying, yeah, if you want to follow some other way and some other path, you're free. But don't do it putting on the guise of a Sai office, Sai organization office bearer or within the organization. Go ahead and do it separately. Don't associate the Satya Sai name to something that Satya Sai name didn't stand for, doesn't stand for. And this is such an important thing for us to, you know, keep in mind when we look around and say things like, so what if they are violating Swami's principle, they are still doing good work, it is still seva only, anyway any kind of work is Swami's work. When we say all this, we have to keep in mind that Swami is not against that good work being done. In fact, as you said, whether it's the Rotary Club or the Lions Club, different clubs which are there, which do a lot of good work, but their modus operandi or style of functioning is different. They have fundraising dinners. And, you know, possibly in the dinners, there are alcoholic drinks served and non-vegetarian food served. It is one way. Fine, you do that. But don't collaborate or don't do that style and call it as, you know, we are doing it for Swami. Just that to get more, in quotes, acceptance in the world or acceptance in society or to attract more people. We are just doing it in this style. We are only changing the style, but we are doing it under Swami's name. No. If it is compromising with Swami's principles, then Swami says, don't put Satya Sai name. Just do it. Do it as ABC charity service and go ahead. Don't try to use the Satya Sai name, the feelings and the emotions that people have towards the Satya Sai name. Don't use that if you are not going to adhere to all that is represented by that name.
And I think the instruction is especially clear for leaders in the organization, people who are office bearers.
Correct.
And a simple example you can think of, you know, we all know that Swami's educational system is very rigorous. There are a lot of disciplines that have to be followed. But when you graduate and you become an old student, Swami doesn't necessarily expect that you follow all the rules which are there in the hostel. I mean, definitely the disciplines, the moral codes which Swami wants us to follow, that is universal. That wherever you are, Swami says you have to follow. Something like wearing whites. Swami doesn't expect that when you graduate and you're working in the corporate world, that you have to go every day in whites. And Swami never, in fact, Swami, when he sent students out to study in Delhi or in America, hospital management program, Swami himself got suits and color clothes stitched for them. And Swami had told those boys, I want you to wear this and send pictures so that I know that you're, you know, using all of this. So Swami doesn't expect. But the moment you've graduated from the college, and let's say that you want to become a teacher who lives in the hostel, then the expectations of you are different from any other alumni, right? Because you have chosen to be in the system in this particular role to carry out this particular responsibility. Similarly, I think the moment somebody becomes an office bearer, I think what is expected of that person is slightly different from anybody who is just a side devotee who is there in the organization. In fact, you know, we are talking about collaborating with other institutions and spiritual organizations and things like that. There is this classic example of Dr. Gokak, who was the first vice chancellor of Swami's university. He had the invite to be on the board of trustees of the Shirdi Sanstan, you know, the Shirdi Baba temple. They had sent him an invite because he was quite a popular person in Karnataka at that time.
I don't know if it's Shirdi Sanstan or Sai Samaj, but associated with Shirdi Baba. Yes.
Associated with Shirdi Baba.
Yes.
And he had brought that proposal to Swami and said, Swami, they're asking me, what should I reply? And Swami said, it's up to you. If you want to be in that board, you be there. But if you're being in that board, don't be in any office, don't be in any position in Swami's organization. And, you know, here is Swami talking about his previous incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami saying, but because they are two different organizations, it is better to keep things separate. So if you want to be in Swami's organization, then, you know, very politely refuse that. There's nothing wrong in being in either of that, but choose between the two. So I think this is, again, Swami is very clear about some of these things. There is no discrimination or hatred from Swami's point of view. I think that is very clear. Swami doesn't say that, oh, you have gone there, so, you know, I will not look at your face anymore and you don't belong to me anymore. Swami is never a person to say anything like that. Swami says, wherever you are, you belong to me. And whether you betray me, whether whatever you do, whatever you speak, you always belong to me. But when it comes to organization, some things are very, very clear. And Swami is saying that discipline has to be followed.
His slip continues. One leader I know has a dual personality. In some cases, the individual is extremely kind-hearted. And in others, if a devotee crosses the leader in any way, it is off with his head and he is gone from the scene. And surprisingly, Swami says, that is the way of the world. Kindness is used with people, but when people do wrong, they must be corrected sternly. Swami does the same. To those who act according to his command and obey him, he gives everything to fill their wants and needs. But if after a long treatment of love and patience they still disobey, Swami gives severe punishment. He gives it because of his love for the person and because he knows that if he does not punish, the person is spoiled. And his love continues, but there is considerable difference. With Swami, it is God Almighty who punishes, whereas in the other case, it is a leader of a center, a personality who is doing the punishing. And Swami agrees. He says, yes, it is as you say. Sai rewards and punishes without self. When humans reward and punish, there is self-interest. So when he says that there's a person who is extremely good, but if anybody crosses his path, he says off with his head, Swami says, see, that is how Swami does. Swami is very loving and kind, but if somebody after getting a long rope also doesn't change, Swami is very strict. And Hislop says, but Swami, that is you. You are God. We know that you know everything. What if a personality is doing this? And then Swami says, yes, if a personality does this, it is not right because there is selfishness. Whereas in Swami's case, it's only selflessness.
Right, but the thing is, Swami is taking the side of the person who is being strict. And clearly we don't know who Hislop is referring to. But Swami is not denouncing the method of being strict in certain cases. Swami is putting it here. Swami would say this. In fact, Swami had said this to parents, but I think it applies to leaders or elders too. Swami would say there should be love, but there should also be law. And Swami would say love and law, both should be there. That is what will ensure that there is growth in children, and that is the case with people here also. So Swami is saying that very clearly. It's not that you have to be soft all the time, you have to be kind all the time, or you should be trapped in that image that you've created for yourself. I think that's what happens with many people. You know, we create an image for ourselves of being very compassionate or being very, very, welcoming and all inclusiveness. That when we have to be firm at a certain time, we are not able to be firm because, you know, we don't want to destroy that image that we've created for ourselves. But if you look at Swami, Swami was never putting himself into any of those boxes. And we've seen Swami going from one end of being so easy to please and so compassionate to somebody being so firm that, you know, and I think that comes out of what Swami said here, because Swami does not do anything out of self. Sometimes we think that Swami is being, too harsh or Swami is being too unfair. But all of us over a period of time will know that Swami was never fair. Swami was never unfair, or Swami was never being partial, Swami was never being too kind, Swami was never being too strict. Swami was only being right all the time.
You know, when Swami says that to those who act according to his command and obey him, he gives everything to fill their wants and needs. But if after a long treatment of love and patience, they still disobey, Swami gives severe punishment. This statement, I think, is something for all of us to take notice, because oftentimes in the organization, working as part of Swami's centers or the trust, whatever, we get a feeling looking at some people and we wonder, you know, this person or these people are so bad, so horrible, they don't seem to be following any of Swami's teachings, and yet they seem to be at the helm of affairs, or yet they seem to be in prominent positions. When we get such thoughts, you know, I think this statement from Swami is something that we should remember always. Because Swami says that he gives a very long rope. Let us not think that, you know, these people, for whatever, maybe because they have been in physical proximity of Swami for so long, or maybe because they have been in the organization for so long, let us not think that because of those reasons they can get away with doing wrong. Let us remember that it is only a long rope that Swami is giving them. It should not make us lose faith and confidence in dharma or righteousness, because dharmo rakshati rakshitaha, dharma eva hato hanti, where Swami says that one who protects dharma will be protected by dharma, one who destroys dharma will be destroyed in turn by the same dharma. So that is for us to keep in mind. And if at all we think that we can, now we are in a position where, you know, we are big in the organization, nobody can touch us, I can do anything and get away with it, even then, this statement is something that I have to keep thinking about, because just because nothing is happening to me and I'm getting away with something doesn't mean that it is allowed. It only means that Swami is giving a long rope. Let me remember that that rope is going to end someday, and when it ends, it will be brutal, it will be strict, and it will be merciless. Because that is how it is. Because when we say mercy, we often associate it in a human sense, you know, with attachment. Swami is absolute detached. He is the epitome of detachment. So he can shower love without any end, without any limit, because there's no attachment. At the same time, he can just cut off that love in an instant. So either if we are, you know, we are indulging in wrong things, or we are seeing people indulge in wrong things and wondering why nothing is happening, this statement from Swami is something that we should hold on to, where Swami says that a long treatment of love and patience is given, and even then if they still disobey, Swami gives severe punishment. So let us not mistake the long rope as Swami's lack of power or anything like that. It is a statement which says, wrongdoers beware, good people hold on.
And when Swami said that when humans reward and punish, there is self-interest, then Hislop says, yes, self-interest is there, but I think it clearly shows that Hislop has judged this person as being rude or harsh or strict out of self-interest. And I think, so he says that when Swami says, yes, when humans do it, there is self-interest, he says, yes, Swami, there is self-interest. When the individual of whom I spoke helped some people in trouble with remarkable generosity, the individual put in a stipulation that on the surface was also generous, but which resulted in people repaying the generosity with much service. And Swami's reply to that is, that was all right. The individual helped the people and they should show gratitude. Unless a person can show gratitude to another being at his own level, how can he expect to show gratitude to the divine? I think there are many ways of looking at this. Swami might have just told Hislop, yes, very true, that person was very bad, he shouldn't have behaved like that. And I think a lot of people like us who are probably on the receiving end of some strict behavior like this, or somebody being irrational with us, would be very happy that Swami is being, siding with us. But another way of seeing it is, there are some qualities which, whether you're being treated badly, you're being treated unfairly, you should have. Gratitude towards somebody who has been good to you is a feeling that should be there. Whether it comes from a person who is being kind otherwise, or at a point in time when they're being strict, or some gratitude is an attitude which should be there. You've received something, you should be grateful to that person. But at the same time, nothing should really bind you. I think the last time when we were speaking also, we had mentioned this. Your discrimination should be free. Your discrimination should not be bound to somebody, to the gratitude you show to somebody. Your discrimination should not be bound to an image that you've created for yourself. Your discrimination should be free to say that this is right, this is wrong, this is what Swami expects, this is what I'm supposed to do. Whether you're a person who is in authority or you're a person who is on the receiving end of somebody's compassion.
Speaking of gratitude, if you cannot be grateful for favors which we know are favors, a person has helped, yeah, he or she might be very strict, but if he or she has helped, it is something that we acknowledge that we have been helped with, and if we can't be grateful to that, a recognized favor, how can we be grateful for unrecognized one? Swami is saying that if you cannot show gratitude to another being at your own level, how can you show gratitude to the divine? Swami says that God gives everything to you unasked. He has given you air to breathe. He has given you water to drink. He has given all these things. It is not, when we are expected to show gratitude for these things, these are things that we take for granted, things that are unrecognized. Honestly speaking, I don't express my gratitude to Swami every day for the air around that we are breathing. Though it is such a vital thing, it's more important than food and water for me, the air. So what Swami is saying is that if you are not able to show gratitude for things that you recognize as favors, where on earth will you be able to show gratitude for things that you don't recognize? So even before expressing gratitude to God for all these things that are given free to us, to reach that level, it has to begin by, showing gratitude for any favor that you recognize. As we start expressing gratitude for the favors recognized, I think we will be able to recognize more and more favors that have been granted to us. I'm reminded of a quote of Helen Keller. Helen Keller was born deaf and blind. Now, because she was born deaf and blind, she could not pick up speech. Therefore, she ended up not having three senses. She could not see, she could not hear, nor could she speak. Yet, there is a video online, if you look, towards the end of her life, Helen Keller is actually speaking. Through vibrations, she learned how to speak. I mean, she is an example for extreme positivity and optimism. And when Helen Keller was once asked, how is it that she doesn't get depressed? How is it that she doesn't feel cheated in life? She says that I begin my day counting my blessings. And when I start counting my blessings, my entire day gets over. I have no time left to think of what I don't have. I mean, you know, when I read that, I felt if this is something that Helen Keller can say, I definitely should not have any time at all for complaining. That's why I think we have to start by showing gratitude for favors that we have acknowledged that we have received. And as we start showing gratitude, we will also develop that ability to be able to see more and more things that we are receiving. And as we start showing gratitude for that, we start seeing more and more. And finally, we will end up possibly like Helen Keller, not having time to complain because we don't have sufficient time to express gratitude. In fact, Swami speaks more about gratitude going ahead, but I think that we shall keep for the next satsang on the conversations with Swami. We will offer this, as always, at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan with all humility and love, and pray to him that all these seeds that he's planting in our hearts, may they sprout, may they grow into strong trees, so that we benefit, everyone benefits, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. On that note, dear listeners, enjoy this song, on the other side of which you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
जगत परिपालिनी जननी देहि शरणम् सिंहवाहिनी देहि शरणम् Sai Narayani Dehi Sharanam Simhava Vinashini
Sharanam Asura Vinashini
Dehi Sharanam Asura Vinashini
Dehi Sharanam Asura Vinashini
Dehi Sharanam Bhava Bhaya
Sai Narayani
De- ദേഹി ശരണം സിംഹവാഹിനി
ദേഹി ശരണം സിംഹവാഹിനി
ദേഹി ശരണം അസുരവിനാശിനി
Sing Bhagavad.